First of all, we're talking with Mr. John R. Platt. Hello, John.
Hi, Billy.
And we're going to give a little bit of an introduction here. Welcome to Earth Riot Radio. And we're honored to be with a person who's a part of the Center for Biological Diversity and editor of The Revelator. The what's the phrase that CBD uses? It's a function of CBD. No, that's the wrong phrase. It's a
project. It's a project initiative. We're a news and ideas site about conservation and climate change and all kinds of related environmental issues. Just trying to get the word out to people who care, who can do something with the information we're publishing.
And you've been described as a environmental journalist covering endangered species.
Yes. I started this about 15 years ago. I started just a blog called Extinction Countdown that became the defining element of my career. So I've covered hundreds and hundreds of endangered species around the world and written about more than a few extinctions over the years.
I think in your final moments on this earth, John, you'll be in a Greek amphitheater on your deathbed, and all the seats in the semicircle in the hill up there looking down at you will be all the species that you talked about over the years.
Wow.
I'll come back and welcome you.
Wag their tails.
Into the netherworld. Well, of course, that's where the Church of Stop Shopping started aligning with you. I believe that Peter Galvin what's your executive director's name
again? Karan Suckling.
See, I said that because I remembered it in print, but I didn't trust myself to say it.
Exactly.
They came to New York. They had a fundraiser gathering, and we had a dinner with them. And we have a feeling about the CBD that is quite different than the feeling that we have for any other quote-unquote NGO.
Sure.
I think a lot of people share that feeling. You seem to be something like 75 scientists and 75 litigators.
And two journalists. That's right.
That's you and who?
Me and Tara Lohan, who's our deputy editor. She does great work covering a lot of water-related issues and wildlife and everything else.
So she's semi-aquatic?
Yeah. But yeah, the center's great. They're it's all science based and legal based, and they do fantastic work, and they put themselves out there. They don't let anything get in their way, and they're a force for good in the world. And they decided to put their money where their mouth is too, to help fund environmental journalism since they saw it struggling several years ago. And we've done a lot of good over the years together.
And the fate of the world is turning towards your basic title, your basic job description, which is unfortunate, but we're glad you're there. Let me turn to kind of what has occasioned this conversation, which is the Ukraine. We found ourselves taking your material into this podcast. And as I mentioned to you, we robbed the research before we realized it was you. Or I did late at night. I saw this article, and I started writing down all the names of the bush crickets and the falcons and the hover wasps and the about 20 of them, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Endangered species in the Ukraine. And then there was John Platt's name at the bottom of the so the Ukraine has been called many things, and it's I saw a phrase, the breadbasket of Africa. I saw it the other day. You have called it a vibrant culture, and it's one of the sites of the generation of the ancient Russian culture. As Vladimir would tell us, that's the reason for slaughtering everybody around where his culture came from. I'm not sure what his nationalistic what his logic is there exactly.
Yeah, I sense a slight logic flaw going on there.
There's a logic flaw there. Can you talk about the Ukraine with us, just in your encounters with the endangered species there? Can you just talk about
that? Well, I've written about how war and conflict and related activities have affected endangered species over the years. So when this started in Ukraine, a lot of people were writing about the connection between the war and climate. It's funded by oil and gas. It's causing all kinds of emissions that are going to further the climate crisis. But I wanted to pull back a little bit and say, what about the things people aren't paying attention to? So I just started digging through the IUCN Red List, which is the International Union for Conservation of Nature, which assesses the extinction risk of species around the world. And it's not totally inclusive. It doesn't include every species out there. But I wanted to see what endangered species live in Ukraine that could potentially be affected by this war. And what I saw was not only a lot of species, that are some of which are wide ranging, that live in more than one country, some of which live only in Ukraine, but I saw essentially metaphors for the war itself in the reasons these species were endangered. You saw a plant at risk from invasive species that are destroying the young. You saw other species that have died out because of habitat loss, species that are stuck in 1 kilometer of river that could easily dry out, again, because of climate change, because, you know, one bomb and those little stretches of river are dry. So
the Chironaya gudgeon you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. So I started digging and I just found all these really interesting species that I think, as they decline, we're losing a lot of what we're losing the culture of the people, the way people interact with these species. We're losing the science. We're losing the connectivity with nature. And as we lose species, we end up with more possibility of more outbreaks and disease, because everything's pushed closer together, and there's less, we end up becoming a monoculture where it could easily wipe out everything at once. So I looked at species like the sandy mole rat, which really, living in the Black Sea Biosphere Reserve, it's right in the path of the invading forces. It wouldn't take much for a several thousand pound tank to roll over these little tiny rodents with buck teeth. Buck teeth don't do much against tire treads. So it would be really easy to wipe these out. And what does that cost? You know, I show a picture of Ukrainian currency with this rodent on it. It's part of their culture. It's part of their heritage. Mm-hmm. What do you lose as you lose the art, as you lose the architecture? You lose a lot.
Well, the monoculture is a phrase we use in the Church of Stop Shopping a lot. The red desert of an Antonioni movie is what we've got all over the United States now. And as the Walmarts die, the richness of the ecosystems, of which there are several different ecosystems across the nation of the Ukraine.
Right.
There are even hills that are mountainous enough for wolves. There's a wolf population.
Yes.
Can you review some of the ecosystems that the nation has?
Well, you've got the mountains, you've got rivers, you've got islands, which are huge reservoirs for biodiversity. The Crimean Peninsula alone, it feels like half these species that I wrote about are on Crimea. You've got, like you said, the breadbasket, the vast fields, a lot of which have been cultivated, but that still provides habitat for birds and rodents and small mammals and everything else. You've got forests, and you've got cities, which can provide habitat for a large number of species if they're done right. I mean, granted, not while they're being shelled, but so it's really one of the biggest countries in Europe and Asia, outside of Russia and China, in Europe and in Asia, and it's just got a wide range of features.
The impact of war on life forms.
Yeah,
it must simply be. Can we generalize? It's just the worst thing for the Earth.
It's terrible
that we make.
It's terrible. You've got anything can die from a bullet, but a bomb, after it explodes, all these chemicals that caused the explosion in the first place, they're in the environment. You got, like I said, the tank treads ripping up the soil.
Those early pictures stomping. Those early pictures, when back when we were impressed by the tanks of Russia, in the first days, coming across, looking like Rommel, you know, just coming across. I was thinking, wow, all the ground nesting birds, just the a tank is a relentlessly, it's a 20-ton affair. And I'm sure that now that when they try to get into the cities, then they're on roads, and it looks a little bit safer for the and that's why they're so vulnerable. At the very beginning, they were coming, remember that? They were coming across, and they looked like old World War II movies.
Coming through the fields.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, on a smaller level, I'm struck when we saw the footage of the hospital in Mariupol that was bombed, the maternity hospital. There was a nice courtyard full of trees, and those trees were just blackened. And what a gift it must have been to the people in that hospital to have the birds filling those trees during times of peace. And those birds aren't going to be back anytime soon. So you're losing micro habitats, or you're losing big habitats. The refugee crisis alone is huge in its impact to wildlife. I don't want to blame any refugee running, but you know, these are people without access to sanitation, without access to recycling. God forbid they have to open a can of beans to eat on the road. What if they have to, you know, in other countries, we've seen massive increases in hunting to feed themselves when they're running from crisis.
Well, now the flames of a bursting shell.
Yeah.
Doesn't that leave, is that like a natural gas leak? Is that like a, what's that? The flame function that you see in refineries where they just have a flame all night long. There must be bad chemicals going into the air.
Oh yeah. It's incendiary chemicals that strike in a way so that they burn. So they spread out, they explode in the first place, but then it leaves chemical residues around. So it poisons the environment. You know, lead bullet shatters into a million pieces, a little bits of lead in the environment. The pollution around gun ranges is insane because of that.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. And then you've got all the Chernobyl, it stirred up all the polluted soil around Chernobyl and cause a spike in radiation that could be seen from space. It's not enough to really cause anything to worry about yet, but it could. So, and then there's in Ukraine, they've got a lot of chemical factories and other things like that that are being destroyed and leaking. And so you've got the man-made things that were containing barely, then being released by war.
Let's have a fantasy that Putin is overthrown and placed in that cage where he had the Siberian tigers that he let out. Let's say that Siberian tigers put him back into that cage.
I love it.
And nature really, Chernobyl being a famous example, nature really heals fast.
It can, given the time. And we've seen that with the Endangered Species Act in this country. You give species a protection, you start mitigating the threats, it bounces back. And you know,
we tend to get morose sometimes, environmental activists, for good reason.
Yeah.
But then I see in one of your articles about the wolverines coming back into Mount Rainier National Park.
Yeah.
We saw a wolverine one time in South Dakota.
Wow.
While we were on a, you know, just a aimless trip to Standing Rock and then out across towards the Badlands, and Savitri and I, and we looked it up and went and determined that it wasn't supposed to be there. That that they, you know, the second year male will roam.
Yeah.
But the comeback, I just feel like some part of me feels like the comeback will happen. It's just every day is so, it's been 20 days now, right?
2021, yeah.
The every day is so destructive and seemingly increasing in the amount of mayhem, exploding bombs. But the Ukrainian people are running a human story that is kind of parallel to some of these comeback stories we have for animals that are endangered, and then we anthropomorphize them, don't we?
Right, we do. We do. We give them human qualities, and
so almost, they fit in our stories, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, you're right. Looking at the human resolution, the willingness to survive, the indomitable spirit, that comes from somewhere. That comes from nature itself, I think.
Yes, it comes from evolution.
Yeah,
it comes from living.
Yeah. So we should look at that resistance, that those solid spines as signs of hope and success, hopefully, eventually.
We have a split happening in the environmental movement. It reminds me of the arguments about nuclear power with the electronic automobiles and the dependence on lithium.
Right.
And we had on our radio show, we had an interview with Max Wilbert and Will Falk, establishing a two-person climate camp up in northwestern Nevada, just below the Oregon line, just north from Burning Man. And there they are. They're sitting on the biggest located lithium supply in the lower 48, I believe, and the 30,000 acre proposed open pit mine. You probably know more about this than I do. Am I getting some of this right?
Yeah, I know some about this. There's another case in Nevada where there was a planned lithium mine, and there was a plant that only grows in that specific location. And there's been a fight that the Center for Biological Diversity has been engaged in for a while to try to protect that plant. It's now been proposed for endangered species protection. And you have to balance that out. I mean, yeah, okay, lithium mining is destructive. Windmills put in the wrong place can be destructive to birds. So we have to, there are things we have to, and if we, you know, massive solar, there's a big plan to put massive solar panel arrays in the desert, which could affect habitat. But is that worse than burning oil? No, but it still needs to be done right. And I think that if we are conscious of that, and we're not fueled continuously by the corporate culture, by the need for profits, if we do things honorably and ethically, we'll be able to make the transition. But yeah, there are going to be some tough choices along the way.
Well, Max and Will want to find that snail darter. They want to find that. They want to find that single, that northern spotted owl. They want to find.
Right.
They've got a beautiful valley there, full of eagles and, you know, just semi-arid, I believe, high desert. I guess valley inspires the green veil. You know, it makes you go in your mind. You go to the wrong place, but they had a whole anti-consumerist critique for us. You know, mm-hmm. We stopped shopping, we were delighted. They just had a whole thing. They said, the problem is not switching from one kind of car to another kind of car. The problem is consumerism. You know, ultimately, we can't drive cars anymore. Ultimately, we're on bicycles and mass transit. Ultimately, we can't, in the United States especially, you know, we have to make a decision where, you know, we can't sit in this luxurious bubble of glass and metal all day long. We can't keep it up. So they had this whole, and here they were talking to us on iPhones on the side of this mountain overlooking this. And so that's where Center for Biological Diversity and the Earth Church come together. Mm-hmm. we have a symbiotic activist appraisal here. So I'm just grateful to have talked with you today.
Yeah.
Coming to the half an hour point. And I know that you could have written probably 600 or 700 words by now about, you know, some species it's more endangered than me. And
I've seen the number of times you've gone to jail. I think you're at risk.
Well, the last time I went to jail was when, Billy Graham's son, Franklin, started a tent hospital by bribing various officials in New York and like putting up 14 of these kind of military style tents in Central Park near the Met. near 80th Street and Fifth Avenue, and in a place called the East Meadow. Suddenly, boom, there's this famous homophobe racist running this hospital. And it was like, it was April of 2020. You know, it was, wow. Just, we were losing 1,000 people a day.
Yeah.
And here was this guy just came in into our tragedy and came into our battle, and we, our heads were turned for obvious reasons. So there he is all of a sudden. So we were going to go out there and just do a little, talking heads thing for, you know, with this tent hospital in the background for social media. And Savitri sees that they're, it's kind of unguarded. There's sort of a low police fence, but she gives me a rainbow flag and says, just go to the back door of the tent grouping there and plant this in those rocks over there and then just walk back.
Oh, wow.
Of course, I never made it back. You know, I was, by the time I planted that flag, that little gay Iwo Jima flag, you know, I was tackled by all these cops because that I think that Graham's billion-dollar church was the first big church to support Trump in 2016.
Yeah, probably.
And their friends, you know, and Trump and him. And this is before Trump's fall. I hope he's fallen. And then, yeah. So, you know, the police were like basically acting like soldiers.
Yeah.
And I was an enemy combatant. And I got tackled and not only put in jail, but my mask was taken from me. It's as if, let's just sort of accidentally kill this protester. That's the feeling I got.
Wow.
I said, oh, you think, they said, this is for your own good. I said, I'm going to hang myself with the elastic on that mask. You think I'll hang myself in my prison? You'll find me hanged on that little ribbon of that little half a millimeter wide ribbon of elastic. You're fucking. So I, well, that can't go on the radio. Fucking.
No,
that's one of the seven George Carlin words. So anyway, it's just great to meet you in person. I'm so grateful that you print my shit. Now we might as well just fall into Carlinville here. Amen. So, okay. Well,
all right.
Thanks, John.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Earthaluya.
Earthaluya.